All right. So this is the part we call the afterburn. I hope that was good and you guys enjoyed that. It was a blessing. So if you have comments or questions, Steve will bring around the mic. And we have Robert and Rob Wyatt and Kurt Meyer are on the live stream, monitoring the live stream. So who's going to start us off with a comment or question? Okay, Maureen.
Thank you, Rabbi. When we were reading Proverbs 20:20, my mind went to Matthew 25:30, where it talks about the worthless servant being cast out into outer darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on what outer darkness is in that context?
Well, this is in Matthew
25:30.
No, I'm not going to explain that now. That's going to be in a different teaching when we get into it. It's not going to probably even be in this teaching because it really starts getting into that whole end times thing, what, you know, how things play out at the in the end. And I don't want to get into something that's going to need that much explanation at this point. Okay? But think of it this way. The simple answer is that the worthless servant is thrown out into the place that has no useful light. Okay? Because it's a place devoid of useful light. I mean, that's our simple answer based on what we've known so far. How's that? Okay? Okay, who's next? Okay, Shira?
Thank you so much, Rabbi. This is really good. And I liked the part at the end. It really got me when you were talking about fasting and how we want to share our misery with everybody and get the attention. And I'd like to make a confession before the body, if it might help anybody.
Three Hail Marys and an Our Father, and then you'd be...
Here we go.
we actually did an Our Father today, so that was good for you right there. You're covered.
I forgive myself.
There you go.
But, you know, some of us, and I've got fingers pointing at me, have had a past where we've always been looking around for people who are miserable because we need to be needed and we become enablers. And Rabbi, I just thank you. You've given me some really good counsel because as I go into a new season of wanting to do more with the music and recording and all that, it requires time apart. And I came to you for counsel because it was just agonizing for me to think about all the people who might need me, and I wouldn't be there for them, and it was just killing me inside. But, you know, I realized, you helped me realize that this is my own dysfunction. We burden ourselves beyond our ability to handle, and Abba does connect us to certain people, and it's wonderful to be connected in the body, but I know I need to wait on him for his assignments and not take on other people's misery. And I have to drop that false need to be needed because it saps life and energy from what he's appointed me to accomplish. And sometimes even just sitting in a room full of people, I'm just picking up airwaves of people's unhappiness, and it's just draining me. And I really have to find ways to stop that. I think sometimes we expect more from ourselves in some emotionally driven areas and too little from ourselves in areas that he's plainly revealed.
Amen. True. Excellent. Look, you know, we as human beings are highly snyoped. Snyoped is an acronym for susceptible to the negative influences of other people. Okay? We are all very susceptible. And so you got to understand that if you're walking around in a negative state, that most people around you are susceptible to that and can, it's contagious. It's like a highly viral, contagious thing. And it doesn't take much for a negative person to walk in a room to get the whole room negative very quickly. Much more challenging for the positive person to walk in, because the positive person walks into a relatively negative room, they end up throwing things at the positive person. So it doesn't generally work that the positive person influences the negative room, but a positive room could be drawn down by the negative person because the positive people aren't going to throw things at the negative person, okay? So, you know, just realize that when you're in a negative state, you can end up in a very selfish sort of mindset where you don't realize that misery loves company. There's a reason that phrase exists, because it's true. You want others to be miserable if you are miserable. Why should I be miserable and everybody else be happy? Why not you just be happy with the others that are happy instead of you being miserable and upset about the fact that others aren't miserable? Okay, who's next? Live stream.
From the Klein family. This is Matthew 5:17. I asked then, Yeshua as a light in the darkness of the world was the walk and talk and example of Torah, which would be his completed teaching.
Was that a comment or a question? As a comment, I agree. I didn't know that it was a question.
Well, they put a question mark in there. I was trying to find the question in there, but
okay, well, I'll just agree with it as a comment.
All right, from Laurie Bornstein, says Matthew 5:13, please explain poor in spirit.
Okay, that would be a whole another teaching then. I think we covered that in the Understanding the Ruach teaching. So does anybody remember, did we cover that in the Understanding the Ruach teaching? I think we did. But bear in mind that the poor in spirit is really talking about those that are going to diminish the Ruach of man and be open and emptying out so that they could be filled with the Ruach HaKodesh. That'll be just a short answer. Something much longer is probably necessary. Perhaps one day we'll do a teaching that just goes through the Beatitudes.
From Elizabeth, it says part one. It says, regarding how can the Father love us even if we make mistakes? And then I think the second part was, how do I remember his love when I feel tempted to believe that I am not good enough for my husband?
Okay, I'm not sure what you mean by husband, whether you mean your physical husband or from the idea of the bride and the bridegroom. But look, the bottom line is, we as parents hopefully have the same experiences, which is why he gives us that, where our children can do many things, and when they do them, we still love them. And they can do some pretty horrendous things. Some of you have children that you have not seen because they're on the streets. Some of you have children that are in jail, but you still love them. Okay, they're still your children. So he gives us that physical metaphor to match up with him in giving us the spiritual understanding that, yes, no matter what we do, he would still love us and desire us to make teshuva. But loving us doesn't mean that we're just welcome to be in his house and do whatever we want. A lot of you have children that you would not welcome in your house in the condition they're in, yet you still love them. But they would not be safe for you to have in your house, and it would be good for you or good for them. It doesn't change the fact that you love them, though. I love you, but you need to clean up your mess before you welcome in this house. That's really what the Father's doing. But recognize that he called you, and this is something that we talk about almost every week now. He called you because you are in a place where you can make the teshuvah necessary, you can repent correctly, and you can get to where you need to go from where you are right now. And if you can't embrace that, you're not going to make it. It's not that you're not going to make it because of what you did. It's not that you're not going to make it because of all the mess that you've... It's because you will not embrace the fact that you can make it. You won't accept that he's chosen you at this point in your life where you are and that you can make it from this point. Haven't we talked about that a lot of late? And that's an internal struggle you have to deal with. If you recognize that none comes unless they're called, unless they're drawn, and if he chose to draw you in the terribly messed up state you're in, and he doesn't make mistakes, then guess what? You can make it from where you are. You can get there from this point. It won't necessarily be easy. There'll be a lot of work to do. All of us have a lot of work to do, but you can get there. You either believe it or you don't. If you don't, you're not going to get there. Remember, this is all about belief. Do you trust him? Do you believe him? Or don't you? Now, you're not going to get there just because he called you. It means you can get there from this point. The work still has to get done. you must still change from what you are into what he is. Okay? Next question.
From Andy Dennis. Says Proverbs 6 on honoring parents. How do we do this when our parents don't fit the bill, despite you loving, caring, praying, and giving honor to them, with evil coming back and abandonment?
Okay, I think we've talked about this a lot, and I think every now and then we get new people, so I'm okay with the question. Let's please realize that honoring parents does not mean obedience. Okay? When you were children, it meant obedience. Okay, you're 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15, whatever, you're a teenager. Obedience is a part of honoring your parents. You're 27, you're 47, you're 57, whatever. Honoring parents means treating them with respect. But you can respectfully keep them at a distance if their behavior is problematic to you and your children. You can say, I appreciate you, Mom, I love you, Mom, or Dad, whoever it is, but what you're doing is not going to work in this house. So you can say, see, when you start using foul language and you're obnoxious and you're rude to them, that's not honoring. You can still be strong and firm and not dishonor them. I know it's hard for some of you to understand, but that's what you need to do. So when they say things like, you need to come to Christmas dinner or we're never going to talk to you and I'm going to attack you and all your siblings are going to attack you, you say, I understand that you need to do that. Whatever you need to do, that's your thing. I can't come. I still love you. Be respectful. You can disagree and be respectful. You can disobey because they're no longer, you're an adult now. You're responsible for you. So you don't have to obey them. Obedience stopped when you became an independent, responsible adult for yourself. Now you show them respect. And there's a way you treat them shows respect. And the way you treat them shows them dishonor and shame. Depends on how you treat them. Hopefully that made some sense. So if they're being obnoxious and rude and attacking and whatever they're doing to you, fine. Keep them at a distance if that's what you need to do. Just do it from your perspective. Be respectful. And just say, you know, this is not going to happen. Okay? I had some people in the group at one point who, whenever their children went to their parents' house, the parents were giving them pork and giving them this and giving them that, purposely disrespecting the children's desire for the grandchildren. And so they told the parents, respectfully, Mom, Dad, if you cannot respect our guidance and rules for our children, they cannot come to your house. That's not dishonoring. They were already dishonoring and disrespecting you. But to say it in a respectful manner, I want my children to be at your house. I want them to have a relationship with you. But if you insist on not respecting the guidance that I have for my children, they're not coming. There's a way to say that that's not disrespectful. Okay? And I know it's hard because your parents are going to say to you, well, if you don't do what I say, you're not honoring your mother and father. They are misusing the verse. The fifth commandment does not say you must do everything they say, period. Just doesn't say it. All right, next question.
Comment from Aaron Murray says, light induces choice, darkness quashes it, lovers of darkness abhor responsibility, and hate anything that forces them to choose one thing over another. So Elohim said, let there be light, i.e. put before man a choice and let them be accountable for what they choose.
I would agree with most of that. I would also say that be careful because sometimes people think they're in light and that light that they're in has a lot of structure and a lot of order and a lot of everything. It's just wrong structure and wrong order. So it's not just people in darkness not wanting any of that. Some of them want a lot of it. Look, if you're Catholic, you've got all kinds of structure. It's not correct structure, but you got a ton of structure. So it's not just, I'm not saying he's wrong. A lot of the time people in darkness don't want structure, don't want any of that stuff. But there are those who do want structure, but they embrace wrong structure. They're still in darkness. Okay? So it's not a universal across the board, those that are in darkness don't want structure. Okay, there's a lot of wrong structures out there. Okay, so Aaron, I agree with most of what you said. You just had one little piece I thought went a little further than I would have gone. Okay, next question. And by the way, Aaron, it's good that you're on today, brother. I know that not always able to get on with the health issues and stuff, so we're glad that you're on there today.
from this one's was asked by a couple people. It says, can Proverb from Tom Lasordo, can Proverbs 6:20-22 parallel Deuteronomy 6:4-9?
Proverbs, well, I know Deuteronomy 6:4-9. Proverbs 6, which verses?
6:20-22.
Are those the ones I covered today? Yes, it absolutely parallels that. The idea of binding them as a sign between your eyes and frontless between your eyes, sign in your hands. Very much like in the Vahafta. So, yeah, Proverbs is referencing the same ideas as is in Deuteronomy 6.
From Madison Fratorola, you explained that rejecting, cursing, the teaching of Torah results in man going into deep darkness. Is Matthew 13:58 an example of this? Man's disbelief resulting in Yeshua not doing miracles there.
Yes.
From Andy Dennis.
Hold on. But just remember that, what are miracles for? To do what? To strengthen faith, right? So if he goes to a place where nobody believes, there's no point in doing the miracles. So when he went to his own town and nobody was believing and things, he just said, I'm not doing anything here. Okay? Miracles are to strengthen belief. Not to create belief, but to strengthen belief. They didn't believe. So he said, fine. What else you got?
From Andy Dennis, Matthew 6:12, you mentioned the man, or the parable of the debtor. I had a thought. Could this mean hearts have been wrong because he didn't want to collect what he was owed before as it would be took?
Well, Matthew 6:12 was talking about forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. The parable that talks about that wicked servant is in a different place, but the bottom line is, Yahweh says you have a wrong mindset if you expect to be treated by him in a way that you're not willing to treat others. Okay, it's all about having a right mindset. You want from him, and you want to receive it, but are you willing to also then give? Remember, we've done this over and over, just to remind us, we are all in the middle, right? Everybody's in the middle. There's those above and those below. And you must treat those below in the way you want those above to treat you. You can't expect those above to treat you in a way you're not willing to treat others. You want forgiveness, you must forgive. You want to be taken care of, you need to take care of. You want to have peace, you have to give peace. You want compassion, you have to give compassion. Whatever you want, you have to be able to give. So it's a mindset. You should not expect or desire something that you're also not willing to then have others expect from you. Okay, next.
From Olivier and Janet Hoffman, says, Rabbi, Matthew 6:6-7, is there a place for Siddur prayers or a combination of prayer with scripture? And what about praying with Emunah, pouring our hearts like Hannah? Please enlighten us.
Look, remember, he's trying to compare that which is done to try to be impressive, okay? If you're praying Siddur prayers because they mean something to you, they resonate with you, the words of it resonate as something you also would want to say, that's your choice. If you have a lot of words to say and you're just pouring out your heart, that's something that may be from moment to moment where you're at. Remember, this is all, again, about an approach and a mindset as to trying to impress. You're not going to impress your Heavenly Father because of the amount of your words. What's going to impress him is the heart and the strength behind the words, and they don't need words necessarily. So if you're in a terrible place where you just need to get a bunch off your chest, so to speak, and you need to say and unburden yourself, do that with him. But you're doing that because you need to do it, not because you think it's going to impress him. Is that fair? Do you understand what I'm saying? So using pre-written prayers like the Siddur prayers, it's not commanded to do, but certainly you could do it. There are some really beautiful and powerful ones. Look, we use some of them from the Machzor, which is the prayer book for the High Holy Days, when we do the, from the Al Chet. We do the Al Chet from the Yom Kippur service, okay, the Kol Nidre service. And so this is a very powerful prayer, It is already written. It's not something that's coming straight off of the top of your head. But you may find a prayer that expresses what you're trying to say. Look, I'll tell you what. Here's maybe a very weird example. Maybe it's a great example. How many of you have ever bought somebody a card? And what do you do when you go to the card store? You look for the card that says what you're trying to say, that you feel, and the words match what you feel. So that when you give it to the person will hear the eloquence of the card expressing what you feel. So this prayer is the same way. I mean, if you find a prayer or a scripture that really expresses what you're trying to say and you want to read that as part of your prayer time, that's great. Everything that we read today was about who you're trying to impress, if anybody. When you're praying, you shouldn't be trying to impress anybody. You should just be talking to your Father. Okay? It's not about impressing anybody. Okay, next question.
From Cheryl W. says, are we to share our misery or bad experiences with our spouse, or is that only spread in a negative state?
Well, again, the number one person you should be able to share your positive and negative stuff with is your spouse, but you should be cognizant of the right moment and timing for it, and is your spouse in a position and ready to handle whatever it is you want to just dump on them? Because that's really what happens, is you're in a mood to just vomit and dump a bunch of stuff on your spouse. You need to do it, but are they ready to receive it? And you're in such an emotional state, you're probably not all that aware of the spouse's emotional state. And are they exhausted and just came home from work? Or did they just wake up first thing in the morning and they're not a morning person? Or is it late at night and they're not a night person? Or, you know, are you aware of the timing of it? But your spouse should be the person you should be number one to counsel with, number one to share in your struggles and stuff. Okay? But be aware of this, though. This is the dangerous part. Are you talking to your spouse with the idea of dragging them into it or poisoning the way they see somebody? Are you trying to get them to be as upset with somebody as you are? Or are you just trying to say, I'm struggling with something and I don't know what to do and I need somebody to help me kind of deal with my emotional state right now? That's where we have to be careful, because often you have a problem with somebody, you go back to your spouse, and the first thing that you want to do, it's not like consciousness, but you want your husband or your wife, whichever side you're on that, to feel the same way about that person that you do. By the way, you do this with your friends. Somebody messes you up, sometimes it's your spouse. Shame on you, then you go to your friends to talk about your spouse. But you want to make them feel about your spouse the way you do at that moment. Or you want your spouse to feel about a person you interacted with the same way you do. You don't like them, you don't want them to like them. You're mad at them, you want them to be mad at them. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's not what we should be doing. Just say, I'm upset with somebody. I'm not handling it well. My peace has been disturbed. I'd like to find my way back to my peace. You're my spouse. Help me. Okay? As opposed to, can you believe so-and-so did this to me? Isn't that awful? What a rotten person that person is, blah, 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 blah. Okay? That's what we do. Oh, I got to tell you about so-and-so today. You can't believe what they did to me. I'm so mad at them right now. Blah. See, be careful. Now, if you're the spouse and you're, you know, that's receiving that, the one that's doing the spewing, don't buy into that emotional vacuum. It's trying to suck you in. Listen. Calm them down, try to counsel without getting emotionally drawn into the same place. That's not easy. Don't get sucked into that where you're now equally upset with whoever. Remember, your spouse, you love your spouse. Your spouse always tells the truth, never exaggerates or is blinded by their emotions. Come on now. We know that when we are in a negative emotional state, we tend to not see things correctly. There are going to be aspects that are either blown up or diminished that we missed because of our emotional state. And so you cannot just believe everything that your spouse says on the level they're saying it. Not that they're lying, but it feels bigger to them because of that state. Your job is to calm them down and help them see things more clearly so that you can deal with what really happened. Not that a bad thing didn't happen, but I'm just saying is when they're still in that, they're so upset, they're not seeing it clear. It's through that emotional filter. Yes? Okay? The thing you have to be careful of, both sides. One is, do not seek to drag your spouse into the state you're in, and you're the one listening, don't get sucked in. These are not easy things to do. Emotions are just incredibly, like, think of like the most powerful magnets that could just draw you in. Man, they could just draw you, especially negative ones. Oh, can you get drawn into that so quick? Let's not do that. But yes, you should be, you should hopefully have a relationship with your spouse where they are the number one primary person that you share all things with. Of course, depending on how you do it, it could really hurt your relationship on how it handled. Because if the spouse doesn't respond the way you want them to, that's a problem. Or if the spouse doesn't like the fact that you're just spewing and vomiting all over the place, that could be, I mean, your relationship can be really tough. You have to know each other and learn how to de-escalate each other. That's not easy to do. Okay? All right, next question.
Vivian Gray, how do we let our light shine and try to do good without enabling the people that we do good for?
Okay, again, the doing good is subjective to the understanding of the person's need. Doing good in general is doing what Yahweh says. I mean, following Torah is doing good. But helping somebody, now we're talking about whether you could be enabling them, that requires a certain amount of discernment. You may want to get counsel about, say, hey, I've got a friend or a family member that this is the situation. I want to help them, but I'm not sure if helping them is helping them or enabling them. We don't want to be enabling people. That doesn't help them, actually. It actually hurts the situation. Okay? So your desire to want to help, don't put this in the category of doing good. Because if you're helping somebody that's enabling, you're not doing anything that's good. But they need. Yes, they need. But how they get the need will set them on a path that will ultimately help them or might continue to wallow in where they are because you're enabling the behavior. So if you're not sure, now often we are quite confident, hey, I know this is not a problem. This person doesn't usually need help with anything, whatever. Hey, I can help them out. But if your thought goes to, I wonder if I'm enabling, then you probably are, and you should ask counsel to say, I'm not sure. Here's the details. Can you help me sort this through? Okay? Because it's very easy for us to become enablers and for people to become entitled, and that is a absolutely darkness on our society. The enabled, entitled people that are just not able to function on their own. And then they get us to be codependent with them. So you don't want to do, someone is going to turn doing good into codependency. Okay? Do not become codependent. Now, you may not be able to see that. That's why you ask for help. And you say, hey, I noticed that this person has needed this, it's just always needing. Well, then that's a chronic problem that needs to be addressed, maybe not by just feeding it. Okay? But every situation is unique, so getting counsel can help. Okay, next question. By the way, my father used to tell me, and I know you've heard this probably from your somewhere down the line, when in doubt, don't. So as soon as you have the thought, then you probably shouldn't without getting counsel. See, the ones that you have no doubt about, you're probably right about most of the time. You know, it's kind of like the most brilliant thing I remember hearing in Driver's Ed. Person asked the question, when do you turn on your headlights? Do you know when you do it? Do you know what the best answer is for that? As soon as the thought comes in your head. If the thought came in your head, I wonder if I should turn on my headlights, then you probably should. It's not based on, well, it has to be so much dark and so much this. And no, as soon as your brain goes, I wonder if I need my headlights, well, put them on. Same thing. If you're wondering, I wonder if I should be helping this person or if I'm enabling them, well, then you probably need to get more information. Probably shouldn't just give them the help. So it's not just about doing good, okay? Because sometimes your effort to do good is not actually doing any good if it's, you know, exacerbating the problem. Okay, next.
From Rodney Shipley, says, maybe this is just a Christianese type thing, but in Matthew 6:14, are we to forgive even if not asked for forgiveness?
All right, I have a teaching called forgiveness, so that's another one to write down, children. I see the Gadol children quickly getting out their pens. But in the teaching forgiveness, you need to understand that forgiveness doesn't have anything to do necessarily with you communicating it to the person you're forgiving. Okay, forgiveness is 100% about you letting something go. Letting a person know that you've forgiven them might be a part of restoration of relationship, but it's not a necessary part of forgiveness. I can forgive you and never tell you that. Talking to you about it is only a part of the restoration process if there's a desire to restore. Whatever happened may have destroyed the relationship from any restoration. That doesn't mean that I can't let go the pain or the frustration or the anger of whatever happened. That's the forgiveness. That keeps the root of bitterness from getting in you. So you must forgive. You do not necessarily have to let anybody know. So a person will say, well, you haven't forgiven me because you haven't told me you forgive me. Well, I've had a lot of people tell me they forgave me and they didn't or whatever, the relationship. It's just words. What you need to do is let go of the angst, of the pain, of the frustration. That's forgiveness. Now, if you and I have a problem, we may or may not be able to restore a relationship. That's going to require a lot more communication about what happened and how we can move forward from it. Okay? So, because somebody will come to you, and I hear this all the time, you never forgave me. What do you mean? Well, we don't hang out anymore. You know, or you don't take my calls anymore. And you, well, because our relationship has changed. Well, that means you didn't forgive me. No, I forgave you. I'm just not putting myself back in the same position to have it continue. I'm not mad at you anymore. I have no more pain about it. I am not challenged in any way emotionally about it. I've released it. That means I forgave you. Okay? But the person would say, well, no, you didn't, because we have not restored our relationship. Well, some relationships don't get restored. That's a consequence of behavior. Sometimes that consequence will cost you somebody. And you're not going to get that fixed. That has nothing to do with forgiveness. That's a restoration process. Okay? Next question.
From Olivia and Janet Hoffman. Says Matthew 6:13, are the trials always of spiritual nature? Is fasting aside from a prayer part of what we need to be doing? Is fasting a command? Please elaborate on how to do this.
Okay, I didn't understand the question. Okay, but let me just take care of verse 13. Look, don't worry about verse 13. Listen to the teaching I did called, here you go, children, you ready? Baptism of fire. It explains all about trials and how to handle them, okay? It's just a recognition in the model prayer that we are looking for protection from the enemy on some levels, okay? We want to be protected from the enemy, and we want to make sure that we are giving all authority, and it says, yours is the reign and the power and the esteem forever. Don't let us accidentally give the enemy any of that. The idea of reigning in our lives or having power, authority, or esteem. Okay, this is what he's talking about as far as the adversary. Give us the tools that are necessary to be delivered from the adversary's mindset, behaviors, etc. So we're not conforming into his image. All right? But this verse is just one verse to mention one little thing about trials. If you want to understand them more, the baptism of fire takes care of it in a lot more detail.
All right, from this last one, from Brian Hillary, says, Rabbi, Matthew 6:17, what does it mean to anoint your head? What does that mean?
Okay, so anointing the head has to do with oil. In other words, it says, look, when you fast, anoint your head. In other words, put some oil on so that you smell good and that you're washing your face and that you're, you know, it has to do with the idea of clean yourself up like you would when you're feeling good about everything. When you're not fasting, when you're not dealing with something. Because people didn't just fast the way he's talking about here, just willy-nilly. They fasted when they were dealing with something pretty serious. Okay? And so he says, look, when you're fasting, go about how you would normally go about. Now, he doesn't say go do extra things that you wouldn't normally do. Then they're going to know you're doing something also. But do what you would normally do. Okay, they didn't have deodorants and that kind of thing, but they might anoint with some oil, and that would help keep their hair, whatever they needed to do, and they maybe put some in their beard and that kind of thing, the oil, and they would wash their face, and they put on their clothes, and they'd walk about their daily business. Okay? So these are things that people, the idea is that these are things that people normally did. It's not like telling you, if you're fasting, you need to anoint your head. Well, we don't anoint our heads right now. He's saying, do what you normally would do so that people don't know you're fasting. So, you know, so if you look like you haven't showered in 3 days because you're fasting, that's not, he's saying, look, shower, shave, whatever you normally do, get dressed. I mean, you know, whatever you normally do that, so people are not going to know you're doing anything other than your normal day. So you're not going to stir people to ask you, why are you fasting? What's going on? What are you doing? Because now you're trying to get the seen by men thing going on. You're wanting the man's reaction. Anything else? We're good. All right, where are the children? Let's get the children from upstairs.